So hello and good evening. I'd like to start by thanking Vajrapriya for his introduction. And just say a little bit to introduce myself. So my name is Prakasha, and that means light, shining light, a lot of space, a lot of light. I've recently moved to Shrewsbury, live about 8 miles away. And this is my first contribution to the centre here. So I've been invited by Vajrapriya to give his presentation. And I must say that I'm very pleased and very happy to be able to do that. So tonight I'm talking about something of momentous import. In a way, far more important than who wins the football. So about those 20 million people, in a way, they don't really know what they're missing. Because tonight I'll be talking about the awakening of the bodhicitta. Awakening of bodhicitta. So that's a tremendously important subject. The very core, very essence of the Mahayana. So particularly what I'm going to be talking about, or what Vajrapriya has asked me to talk about, is the relationship between the transference of merit and self-surrender. So that's the final section from the Sevenfold Puja. The relationship between those sets of verses and a text called the Bodhicharya Avatara. The Bodhicharya Avatara. So that was written by a person called Shantideva. So that's what I'm going to be talking about tonight, the relationship between those verses, which I assume we're probably familiar with. Is that the case, the Sevenfold Puja? Have many of you, most of you done that? Okay, so that's what I'm going to be talking about, the relationship between particularly that final set of verses and the particular text where all of those verses come from, all of those verses from the Sevenfold Puja. So that's a text called the Bodhicharya Avatara. So I'm going to give a little bit of an introduction to that. So this text was composed by a person called Shantideva in the late 7th century. And he lived at a very important Indian university called Nalanda. That was probably the most famous monastic university in all of India. And Shantideva was a monk, he was a philosopher, he was a poet, and he's most famous for writing this particular text. So the text for Bodhicharya Avatara translates as something like entering the path of awakening. Entering the path of awakening. So when we say Bodhi, we're talking about awakening. We're talking about enlightenment. And Charya is following or practicing awakening, following the path to enlightenment. So that's more or less what the title of his text. And his text was particularly famous. So we're talking about the Indian Middle Ages. It's a Mahayana text, and it was particularly famous, so famous that it became one of the most core and essential texts when Buddhism went to Tibet. And it's also been brought to the West. So it's become important as Buddhism has moved to the West, whether in Europe or America or Australasia. This text is also very important too. And the founder of our movement, Sangharajita Banti, chose a particular sequence of verses from this text called the Bodhicharya Avatara for us to chant. So he selected the verses from this text, and he composed this particular devotional sequence that we often recite. So it's a sequence that we recite here in this class, and it's widely recited throughout the Tree Ratna community. So it's something that's important to get to know. And what we call the Sevenfold Puja is a sequence of short devotional verses. So it's there to inspire us, it's there to encourage us, it's there, if you like, as a channel for our devotion, a channel for our faith. And the seven sets of verses that we recite as the Sevenfold Puja are taken from one of the earlier sections of the Bodhicharya Avatara. So there's this second and third section. Particularly tonight, I'm going to introduce the third section of the Bodhicharya Avatara, which is entitled Embracing the Bodhicitta. So I'm going to be talking about both transference of self, transference of merit and self-surrender, and also verses from this section, Embracing the Bodhicitta. And we can say each of these seven sets of verses communicate a particular theme and communicate a particular devotional mood. So the seven themes, the seven moods, I'll just explain. You may be familiar with these or not. They're worship, salutation, going for refuge. What we've just done, we've recited the refuges and precepts, so that's the refuge section. And then there's a section on confession, a section on rejoicing, and then a section on entreaty, entreating the Buddhas to continue to teach the Dharma. And then there's this final section, which I'm going to be talking about tonight, which is the transference of merit and self-surrender. So, as I say, as we recite these particular devotional verses, then they evoke a particular mood, we enter into that mood, and the whole puja has a kind of coherence to it. It expresses certain values, it conveys a particular mood, and hopefully, if all has gone well by the end of it, well, we may feel uplifted, encouraged, inspired, or who knows how that will be. Of course, on different nights it may be different things. It's very much a practice for us to engage with. And within the seven sets of verses, there's a text called the Heart Sutra, which really contains the essence of Buddhism. It's a text of the perfection of wisdom, not all that easy to understand, but very deep and very profound. And we also recite some mantras invoking various Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. So that's a brief introduction to the Sevenfold Puja. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to not only talk tonight, but I'm going to recite various verses from this section, Embracing the Bodhicitta. So I'm going to start off by reciting the sets of verses which come immediately before the section that we're considering tonight. So that's for transference of merit. So I'm going to recite the verses on rejoicing and entreaty. And I'll just plunge straight into these verses. And they will convey a certain tone. And particularly for one on rejoicing, well, we move straight into, I rejoice with delight in the good done by all beings, through which they obtain rest with the end of suffering. May those who have suffered be happy. I rejoice in the release of beings from the sufferings of the rounds of existence. I rejoice in the nature of the Bodhisattva and the Buddha, who are protectors. I rejoice in the arising of the will to enlightenment and the teaching, those oceans which bring happiness to all beings and are the abode of welfare of all beings. And just to recite these verses is to begin to establish the mood of rejoicing. In a way, once we start rejoicing, well, it encourages us to enter into a mood of uplift and positivity. So having recited those verses, we continue with the verses of entreaty, entreating Buddhas and Bodhisattvas to continue teaching the Dharma. So saluting them with folded hands, I entreat the Buddhas in all the quarters, may they make shine the lamp of the Dharma for those wandering in the suffering of delusion. With hands folded in reverence, I implore the conquerors desiring to enter Nirvana, may they remain here for endless ages, so that life in this world does not grow dark. So, the Dharma is a lamp. It's a lamp in the darkness. So, all of the verses convey certain symbols, certain metaphors, and those symbols evoke our imagination. And we can just allow the images to speak to us and be open to what those images or symbols convey. So now I want to introduce this section called the Transference of Merit and Self-Surrender, which is our real theme tonight. So I'll just read the verses on the Transference of Merit. May the merit gained in my acting thus go to the alleviation of the suffering of all beings. So, well, this raises the question, well, what is merit? And how can we possibly transfer it? And is it, in fact, something that can be transferred? Well, they certainly thought so in ancient India, as if it was a kind of commodity that could be accumulated and given away. So really we can understand merit as the benefits that we accumulate, the fruitions that we accumulate from positive, skillful states of mind. So when we enter into positive, skillful states of mind, then benefit accrues. Merit accrues. And in a way, well, as we dedicate that merit, we accrue even more merit. And as we dedicate even that merit, then we accrue even more merit. So it's this self-perpetuating cycle of accruing merit, giving away merit, accruing merit, giving away merit. So there's just mountains of merit. And we give it away to sentient beings. So sentient beings are our benefactors. So whatever we have, we can imagine giving away to sentient beings, giving away sentient beings so that we can alleviate their suffering. And this is very core, this is very central to what a bodhisattva is all about. So Shantideva is a bodhisattva. He's someone who is following on the path of awakening, someone who has dedicated themselves to enlightenment. So Shantideva wants to attain enlightenment itself. He wants to awaken, but also he wants that awakening, that enlightenment for everyone, not just himself, but for everyone. So he's very keen, he's very concerned with the alleviation of suffering. So that's very much the bodhisattva ideal. So may all beings, may their suffering be alleviated, and may they attain enlightenment too. So Shantideva enters this mood of self-surrender, in which he gives up everything. Whatever he has, he just gives up. And it's quite drastic. So I'll read the verse, and when one begins to think about it, wow, it really is quite drastic. Shantideva says, my personality throughout my existences, my possessions, and my merit in all three ways, I give up without regard to myself for the benefit of all beings. So with Shanti Deva, that there really is no holding back. He's just giving everything. He's giving his all. He's decided just to really plunge in without any kind of reticence. He's not holding on to the rail. He's just plunging in and offering up everything. So whatever is obstructing his course to enlightenment, whatever obstructs the awakening of all sentient beings, he's willing to give that up. He's willing to give up his restrictive identity, whatever limits his awakening. He's just willing to just give that up. Anyway, give it away, so that he'll feel lighter and brighter and happier. As the more he gives up, he believes, the more awakened he'll become. So just give up, give it away, and open up to awakening. That's, in a way, the simple theme that he's communicating. So, in a way, it's quite drastic, really. Opening up to bodhicitta, opening up to awakening. And letting go of doubt, letting go of reticence, letting go of whatever he is holding on to. And that he's opening up to is called the bodhicitta. So the bodhicitta is this spirit of awakening, this open heart, this open mind. It's the will to enlightenment. There's all sorts of translations, but we can just simply call it the bodhiha, the will to enlightenment. So that's what he's opening up to. And he's just giving up whatever stands in the way to that awakening. And when we begin to look at this verse, I give up without regard to myself for the benefit of all beings. Well, we can imagine this takes a lot of courage. This takes a lot of faith to begin to give up what is holding us back. It takes a lot of courage. It takes a lot of faith. It takes a lot of confidence. So Shantideva really enters into this mood of idealism. He enters into this mood of altruism. He enters into this mood of service for the benefit of beings. So let me read you some more verses. Just as the earth and other elements are serviceable in many ways to the infinite number of beings inhabiting limitless space, so may I become that which maintains all beings situated throughout space, so long as all have not attained to peace. So with these verses, Shantideva relates to the elements. So there's various elements. There's earth, there's water, there's fire, there's air, there's space. And we can understand that all of these elements support us in our life. So we're standing on the earth. We're breathing the air. We're warmed by the fire. So the elements support us living beings in all sorts of ways, in innumerable kinds of ways. And Shantideva says, well, may I be like the elements that support all beings. May I support living beings as much as I can. So again, Shantideva communicates this, I would call it idealism, altruism. The verses are just very imaginative. He's a poet. And he writes the verses, as it were, to stir us. And he's not wondering if, he's not worried if we're finding this is just really over the top, or no, I don't want to do this, or no, I just can't imagine doing it. In a way, he's just engaged in, well, what seems to us an emotional, a devotional fervour. In a way, he seems to have entered into a kind of ecstasy where there's just no holding back. And he's encouraging us to do the same, to emulate his own fervour and idealism. So let me see if I can find where the next set of verses are. Yeah, so I'll read some verses which are not in the Sevenfold Puja, which continue this theme of self-surrender. So Shantideva goes on to exclaim, "May I be medicine for the sick. May I be their physician and their nurse until sickness is no more. May I destroy the torments of hunger and thirst with rains of food and drink. And in the aeons where there is no food, may I myself be food and water. May I become an inexhaustible treasure for those who are poor and destitute. May I be their servant to give them all that they need." So we can say that these verses all convey the spirit of what bodhicitta is. So but bodhicitta is, well, it's medicine for the sick. It's what will really heal us. It's food and drink. It's what will really nourish us. It's bodhicitta is an inexhaustible treasure. It's the true wealth, the real wealth. It's what will make us, it's what will really enrich us. So they're all metaphors for the bodhicitta. I like this inexhaustible treasure. Bodhicitta is this inexhaustible treasure. So the awakening is just simply inexhaustible. It's of true benefit. And the bodhicitta is the awakened mind. So there are different ways that we can talk about enlightenment. So the bodhicitta is a later Mahayana term. It wasn't there when the Buddha taught originally. So the Buddha attained enlightenment beneath the Bodhi tree. He attained Bodhi, he attained enlightenment. And later Mahayanists would say, well, he awakened bodhicitta, he awakened the bodhicitta. And we can understand awakening enlightenment as wisdom, understanding, but also as love and compassion. It always has this kind of doubleness of aspect. It's something which is both heartfelt, it's compassionate, it's empathy, it's about love and compassion for other people, but it's also about understanding how things really are. So bodhicitta, the awakened mind, always has this doubleness of aspect. So Shantideva continues, "Nirvana is the giving up of all, and it is nirvana my heart yearns for. If I am to give up everything, then let me give it to beings." So Shantideva sets his mind on nirvana, enlightenment, but also just offering up everything that he has, offering up everything that he actually is as a person, and dedicating that, offering that to the benefit of other beings. So there's really no limit to this imaginative identification with living beings, and no limit to this conception of generosity. So for Shantideva, if it can be owned in any kind of way, then he's willing to give it up. Whatever it is, he's willing to offer it up. So let me just read some more verses. Yes, I like these. But who has some favourite verses? And as a text, it's really grown over me over the years. I've studied these verses over a period of some 40 years, and I've read the text, I've heard talks about them, I've studied it, I've recited it, I've recited it as a text, and of course I've recited the puja. But I particularly like these. So Shantideva goes on to say, I would be a protector for those without protection, a guide for those who wander, a boat, a bridge, a causeway for those who long for the other shore. For all beings, I would be a lamp for those needing a lamp, a bed for those needing a bed, a slave for those desiring a slave. For all beings, I would be a wish-fulfilling gem, an inexhaustible vase, a magic spell, a wishing tree, and a cow of plenty. So we can understand that all of these images are really images for bodhicitta, for the awakened mind. So bodhicitta, the awakened mind, well, it is a boat, a bridge, a causeway for those who long for the other shore. So the other shore is nirvana. So there's this whole metaphor of us crossing from one side to the other, crossing from samsara to nirvana. So bodhicitta, well, it's a lamp for those needing a lamp. And when we reach this section here, a slave for those desiring a slave, it's like we've gone beyond all rational discourse here. We've gone beyond, as it were, trying to be sensible. We've gone beyond trying to sort of keep control, to be sensible, to be moderate, to be reasonable. Well, we're not being moderate here. We're not being reasonable at all. We've entered into a kind of devotional fervour, a kind of ecstasy. And we're just running with that because it's just so much fun to let ourselves go, to sort of let go of the rail, and to enter into, well, just to let go and to sort of go with the enthusiasm instead of being sensible and kind of moderate and reasonable, because so much of the time we are kind of reasonable, aren't we? You know, we're moderate, we do sensible things, and we attempt to be sensible kind of people. And perhaps I should be giving a sensible talk, a sort of moderate, reasonable kind of sensible talk that would make sense. But this isn't going to. I mean, it can't really with a subject like that. In a way, we just have to kind of let go and to enter into, well, what is actually rather crazy? What is actually rather magical? What is actually rather imaginative? What is, in a way, the Indians were very fervent kind of people. They didn't have this kind of English kind of restraint, perhaps. Perhaps they liked this kind of emotional kind of ecstasy, and perhaps they felt at home with it. Well, we've got a certain amount of adjustment to do. In a way, we're not so used to kind of letting ourselves go into these kind of into this devotional fervour. But maybe we could perhaps just do it a little bit. Maybe just a tiny bit. Just, you know, a smidgen. We could, well, we're going to recite some of these verses tonight, you know, sort of a bit later on. And when we get to these verses, just try, you know, going with it and kind of letting go and just kind of see how it feels, I suppose. That's the invitation, really. Anyway, let's not get carried away too far. Let's be reasonable. So where did I get to? I don't know. I'm trying to give a talk. I've lost my place. I don't know where I am. It's all going wrong. So just give me a moment. I'll find out where I am. I'm not embarrassed by this, by the way. It happens all the time. Right, okay, I've got it. So, I want to talk a bit more about Shantideva as a bodhisattva. So, well, what is a bodhisattva? Does anybody know? Are we familiar with this term? I'm not really certain. I've barely been here, really, so I don't really know what we're familiar with. But perhaps just let me explain that there is this thing called a bodhisattva path that bodhisattvas follow, and the Bodhicharya Avatara is a guide for bodhisattvas. Bodhisattvas follow this path, and this path has various steps, it has various stages, and it begins with this evocation of bodhicitta, this invocation of bodhicitta. It begins with these seven devotional sections, but then it continues with some quite practical areas. So there's this teaching called the Six Perfections. So the Six Perfections really are the bodhisattva path that the bodhisattva practices on. And the Six Perfections are firstly giving, or dana, which Shantideva really exemplifies. There's ethics, which is, well, the practice of the five precepts, practice of the 10 precepts, practice of ethical conduct. There's the stage of patience, acceptance of how things are, acceptance of ourselves, acceptance of our life. There's energy, virya, the efforts that we make in our life to practice for Dharma. So where did I get, that's the fourth one. Then there's meditation, practice of mindfulness, metta bhavana, just sitting, various other meditations. And also wisdom. So these are the six perfections that Shantideva describes. And there's various sections. The text describes these sections in quite a lot of detail and does talk about them in a fairly sensible kind of way. Although, well, he is Indian, so he does go to excess at times. They're all there to help the bodhisattva awaken the bodhicitta. And I want to recite just a few more verses. As the Buddhas of ancient times grasped this bodhi heart and followed resolutely upon the bodhisattva path, so shall I awaken this precious heart for the welfare of the world. And I too shall follow that path in all its stages. And like a wise person who joyfully seizes that bodhi heart, I shall rejoice so that it will grow and thrive in me. So Shantideva, a bodhisattva, rejoices as this quality of bodhicitta arises within him. He rejoices as awakening arises. It's tremendous to sense this awakening happen within one, perhaps as a fruition of very much effort, perhaps as a fruition over many years, the sense awakening beginning to arise within us is a cause for tremendous optimism and confidence and joy. And these verses are often recited by those who want to take the Bodhisattva vow, particularly these last three verses that I've just read out. So for those who want to make a particular commitment to awaken bodhicitta, those three verses are often recited. So may I follow resolutely upon the Bodhisattva path, so that I shall awaken the precious heart, bodhicitta, for the welfare of the world. In a way, that's the Bodhisattva vow, the Bodhisattva commitment, just expressed very essentially in just a few lines. May I awaken for the benefit of all beings. May I benefit all beings. And as I sense that process taking place in my life, well, I can really rejoice. That's really something tremendous. So I've just got a little bit more time. Let me just read a few more verses. So as the Ashantideva Bodhisattva discovers that bodhicitta actually is arising, he then recites these verses. Today my birth has borne fruit and my humanity has been fulfilled. Today I am reborn in the Buddha family and I am now a son or daughter of the Buddha. And now I must live up to my birth and by my actions must place no stain upon that spotless family. Just as a blind person may find by chance a priceless jewel in a heap of refuse, so somehow this Bodhi spirit is hidden even in me. And this last verse is particularly famous. So there's this metaphor of a blind person finding the bodhicitta in a refuse heap. It's as if you go out to your bin and you empty out your rubbish bin and, oh, there at the bottom is something kind of gleaming and you suddenly discover this priceless jewel of inexhaustible value. It's like winning the pools. Suddenly you go from your ordinary life and you're a multi-millionaire or a billionaire or something like that. You've suddenly discovered something of just immense importance and significance. And the point about this is, in a way, it's not where you thought it would be. In fact, it's the last place you would have looked. And often, as it were, deep within our own heart is the last place that we actually look to discover bodhicitta, the last place that we actually look to discover what awakening is. In a way, with this consumeristic world, the world is telling us it's out there somewhere. It's on the TV tonight. That's where you'll find it. It's in that match, that's where it will be. And if you open up to that, that will give you supreme happiness. But will it? Will it? Does it ever? Can you really find it outside of yourself? Can you really, you know, in all of your searchings, in all of your lookings, Do you think you can find it outside of yourself? So where should we start to look? In a way, it's the place which we too easily overlook, in a way. Who would have thought that the bodhicitta would arise in people like us. Who would have thought that? But it does. It will. That's the incredible thing. That's what Shantideva for. Who would have thought it would arise in someone like me? But it did. And it can. And it will. It arises in people just like us. If we take the courage to look deeply within our own heart. In a way, that's all that he is really asking us. All he is really asking us is to find that jewel buried deep within that dung heap. Sorry, I'm not trying to offend you here. Deep within that garbage can, or deep within this kind of carcass that we are. So somewhere that's where we discover bodhicitta. And this bodhicitta is priceless, it's inexhaustible, and it's there within us. And, well, it's an extraordinary discovery. It's an extraordinary... So we are all blessed with this human potential because we have hearts and minds. Well, that's all we need, actually, for awakening to take place. That's actually... All that is required is to be a human being with a heart and a mind. That's the raw material. That's actually what we need. So I'll just read you final set of verses. It is the elixir of life which destroys death, the destroyer of all, a limitless treasure to destroy all poverty, the supreme cure for the world's sickness. It is a tree of rest for the wearied world wandering on the road of being. It is a bridge for all travellers passing over the waters of suffering. It is a great sun dispelling the darkness of the world's ignorance. It is fresh butter churned from the milk of the true Dharma. It is a banquet of joy which refreshes completely all who hunger for happiness. Today I invite the world to Buddhahood and to all the happiness of the Dharma. May gods and everyone rejoice. So that's Shantideva's invitation. It's an invitation to all of us, in a way, for us to look within us, to discover our unique potential that each one of us carries deep within us. And in a way, reciting the Sevenfold Puja is a way into that discovery. It's a way into that discovery. And, I have to admit, I've been reciting the Sevenfold Puja for many years. And when I first started reciting it, there was this sense of novelty and I had this enthusiasm for it. But then, after a few years, I just felt very bored, actually. And I just felt, this is just very repetitive. I've been, reciting this puja over and over again, and I just lost any sense of freshness to it. But one of the amazing things that has happened in my life is that I feel more able to enter into the freshness of the moment and just be present with what's there. And when we come to recite these verses, well, that's all that we need to do, is to bring a fresh, open mind to them and just be present with however that is for you and whatever that calls forth. So a bit later on this evening, we will be reciting some verses. We'll be having a period of meditation. And, we can just try it out and see how it is. Anyway, right now, it's going to be time for tea. So we'll finish there.